Okay, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here. I just didn't know quite the time schedule, so forgive me to be a bit late. I would like to give you some ideas about thiol redox control and redox signaling. We'll focus on the brain. The thyroid oxygen and glutaridoxin systems. I'm sorry I don't speak French. My French is rusty, to say the least. Were discovered in connection with ribonucleotide reductase. Ribonucleotide reductase is the enzyme in all cells which makes the 4-deoxyribonucleotides required for DNA replication and DNA repair. And from what you heard here also, the retina is a cell where you have DNA, of course, and you probably have quite a lot of DNA repair also going on. Now, each turnover of ribonucleotide reductase is connected to a cycle, either thyridoxin, taking electrons from NADPH, or glutathione and glutaridoxin. Because in the enzyme, there is a disulfide generated for each deoxyribonucleotide made. This is quite impressive because in a T cell, which is in the immune system, you have 100,000 disulfides made per second, and you have to reduce these. So these two systems are involved with ribonucleotide reductase, but also have a number of other functions. Thyridoxin is reduced by thyridoxin reductase via NADPH. And in our cells, this enzyme is a selenoenzyme. It contains selenocysteine. There are three different enzymes, one in mitochondria and the thyridoxin in mitochondria, but also in the cytosol. And we are now interested in the cytosol. Thyridoxin is the cell's general protein disulfide reductase. But it's also externally, it's secreted out from cells, and it generates a compound called thyridoxin 80, which has similarities to what you just heard here with a short and long form. In general, redox controlled by thyridoxin is that reduced thyridoxin binds apoptosis signaling kinase to prevent apoptosis. Peroxyredoxins are abundant cysteine-containing peroxide-removing compounds, which use thyridoxin as reductants. A large number of transcription factors are regulated by thyridoxin to keep DNA binding intact. Thyridoxin is involved heavily in nitrosylation, NO modification, and there is a specific inhibitor of thyridoxin. Now, in thyridoxin 80 is the 81st amino acid residues. A shorter form of thyridoxin, the N-terminal. It's cleaved at, if you see this picture, this is E. coli thyridoxin, no, sorry, human thyridoxin. Here is the active site. And thyridoxin 80 is an 80 amino acid natural cleavage product of thyridoxin, lacking the C-terminal motif of thyridoxin. Importantly, this lacks disulfide-reducing activity, and it was originally found by Silberstein and co-workers at Harvard as a eosinophilic cytotoxicity-enhancing factor. Eosinophils kill larvae of schistosomiasis, for instance, and eosinophils become more toxic when this compound was around. So they identified it, and we cloned it later. Klaus Pekka in my laboratory cloned it. And here you have a picture of human thyridoxin. The active site is always a cysteine, glycine, proline, cysteine thing here. In this case, it's a disulfide. And there are additional cysteine residues in human thyridoxin 1. I can tell you that these two cysteine 62 and 69 can regulate the activity of this thyridoxin. If you form a disulfide here, you make a molecule of thyrodoxin which is inactive and it is secreted. We believe this is what generates thyrodoxin 80 when you have a disulfide here. You destroy this alpha helix. Now, if you remember, I told you about thyrodoxin 80 cleaving here at this, these are 80 residues here. You can see the blue part is what is removed in thyrodoxin 80. So this is the terminal helix and a beta strand, and you leave a rather hydrophobic area here in the protein open. Now, what we found when we made this compound was if we took PBMC cells, these are cells you isolate from human blood, and you incubate with thyrodoxin 80, monocytes, which are the precursors of macrophages and so on, start to grow. So it's a growth factor for monocytes. And also they proliferate and something happens. Before that, I just put in a slide here which we made a couple of years ago with Kjell Fuchse in Stockholm, collaborating in neuroscience. And this is a rat brain. And here is a low resolution sort of image of where you have mRNA for thyrodoxin. You will see the same if you had an antibody. It's expressed in many nerve cells and you find it here. Here is a damage done now by inserting a knife. So you have like a stroke here. And you can see after 24 hours, you have a strong upregulation of thyrodoxin on this side. And it even goes over on the other side. And it takes quite a while, about a week, for this to return. And thyrodoxin is described as a trophic growth factor. And of course, this involves also generation of thyrodoxin 80, which this picture does distinguish. Now back to the monocytes. The monocytes we call thyrodoxin 80 activated monocytes. And what is the role here of thyrodoxin 80? Well, in the immune system, it's inflammatory, pro-inflammatory. This very complicated slide, I excuse me for this. The main thing is that the monocytes here, activated by thyrodoxin 80, start to produce pro-inflammatory compounds like IL-12, which in a context of other immune cells starts an immune system, a Th1 immune system. And Th1 response is defense against intracellular and myeloid pathogens, and et cetera. So it starts an inflammatory reaction. And we have characterized this quite extensively, sort of, and we know this. So in the immune system, this is inflammatory, a Th1 system response. Now, I started a collaboration, or rather a large group here at the Karolinska. Bengt Winblad, Angel Sadaso Menguis have a laboratory dealing with Alzheimer's disease, a brain disease, as you know. And this resulted in a publication which answered some questions. One is, how do you generate thyrodoxin 80? Is it by cleavage, proteolytic cleavage, or is it by splicing or something like that? And what is the role of thyrodoxin 80 in the Alzheimer brain, in the aging brain? And an earlier publication from the group here, Winblad, Angel, Sadaso, showed that Alzheimer brains have low thyrodoxin expression and low thyrodoxin 80, and that is the key take-home message here. So in the brain, thyrodoxin 80 and thyrodoxin are protective. They are not inflammatory. In general, you know that Alzheimer's disease is a disease of the brain where you lose synapses and connection and with drastic effects. And actually here, thyrodoxin 80 comes out as a positive, protective thing. The first thing we discovered and know that we have a monoclonal antibody which distinguishes thyrodoxin 80 from thyrodoxin. That's important because it's 80% of the molecules are the same. And the thyroxinate is present in cultured nerve cells, in the brains and so on, in brain cells. And it comes out as a 30 kilodalton band here. And this is due to a lot of aggregation of thyroxinate. It aggregates extensively, and you can actually age preparations of thyroxinate, and it gets aggregated. So in the brain, thyroxine is present as a 30 kilodalton. Remember that the molecular weight of thyroxinate is only 10 kilodalton, so it's aggregated. And I've taken some slides from this publication where you can study details of this. Again, the aggregation is due to certain residues here. It doesn't fibrillate like insulin, but it aggregates, and a lot of that is due to the hydrophobic surface areas here. Here is an important slide. In control brains, thyroxinate is there. In the Alzheimer brain, thyroxinate is very low, and here you have the statistics. Here is the control brains from a brain bank, and here are Alzheimer's. And here are pictures also of localization of thyroxinate together with A-beta-42. It's so in Alzheimer's disease that the suspect today of the disease is A-beta-42, for instance, which is generated by sequential cleavage and aggregates and seems to cause oxidative stress and so on. And we could show here that actually thyroxinate binds to A-beta, the amyloid part here, which so thyroxinate comes out as a protective factor. Again, this is a very complicated slide taken from the picture showing that thyroxinate and thyroxin are induced by formal esters, and you can actually see that the relation between thyroxinate and thyroxin, even when you measure in plasma, there are levels of thyroxinate in plasma as well as thyroxin. And the level of thyroxin in plasma samples from patients or people is related to inflammation and so on. Thyroxinate is not related to that, and one can actually measure thyroxinate in cerebrospinal fluid here, also have some things there. Again, details you find in the publication. Now, the cleavage of thyroxin, thyroxinate, comes out as an alpha secretase cleavage with ADAM17. ADAM17 is an alpha secretase which one can show here is in membranes is connected to where thyroxin is, and also there are inhibitors used here to do this. So if I summarize this part of the whole thing, thyroxinate in the brain is a 30 kilodalton aggregated molecule which is decreased or lost in Alzheimer's disease. In aging brains of Alzheimer, you have low thyroxin and low thyroxinate. The thyroxinate seems to be protective instead in the brain, so it combines to A-beta. And the cleavage here is by an alpha secretase instead, which is called ADAM17, which is a well-known sort of enzyme. Okay, let's switch to something else we do in the laboratory. And these are partly unpublished results generated by Rajiv Sengupta, who was a postdoc in my lab, and now he's back in India, in collaboration with Michael Schlossmacher from Canada. Alzheimer's we just spoke about. Here are some of the things, concepts. Another disease of the brain is Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's disease, of course, as you know, is substantia nigra, dopamine-producing cells. And here are a number of the possible or the symptoms of this disease, which is perhaps the second most abundant brain disease. We have studied Parkin, and Parkin is a protein associated with Parkinson's disease. And Schlossmacher's laboratory has expressed parkin together with maltose binding protein, and that's what we have studied. The parkin is expressed in many different sites here. You can see all these sites have parkin. So what is parkin? Parkin consists of three domains, and it is connected to Parkinson's disease through a number of good publications. There are three domains in parkin: a UBL domain, a ring domain, and this IBR domain here. And here is some idea about the protein, which has about 465 residues. And what we have done so far is protein expressed together with maltose binding protein to be able to purify it. Recently, Schlossmacher's lab has now good expression of full-length parkin, so we can do more with what I describe now. Now, how does parkin work? Well, the UBL domains targets ubiquitinated substrates to the proteasome, and the ring domain binds the substrates. And here you have, again, the domains in parkin. Now, one of the remarkable things for me as working with thiols my whole life, more or less, is that parkin is a protein which is very rich in cysteines. It's about 7.5% cysteines in parkin. Most proteins in our body have about 2% of cysteines, and there are actually 35 cysteine residues here, and you have them all here outlined. And what Rajib Sengupta has been able to do is to sort of map out how these cysteines react, and we will come to that. Again, a little bit of background. The ring domains, or IBR ring domains, work together with ubiquitin ligase here to remove damaged proteins. And here is again some textbook material that a substrate which is going to be degraded is bound here, and you can ubiquitinate it, and it can go to the proteasome and be degraded. And this is particularly important, I think, in the substantia nigra, where there is dopamine produced, and dopamine is auto-oxidizable and easily creates damaged proteins and the risk for cell death. So, removing. And again, this is a background sort of what a lot of proteins can be working with parkin to be removed, to sort of clean up damaged proteins and send them to degradation in the proteasome. So this comes back to a more general idea about oxidative stress in the brain. The brain consumes a lot of our oxygen, and it is a high metabolic rate. Metals are present in the brain, particularly, for instance, in the dopaminergic neurons, and this can lead to oxidative stress. NO can also react with proteins and nitrosylate them. And I have already told you that dopamine is by itself a dangerous transmitter, because auto-oxidation of dopamine creates reactive oxygen species and particularly damaging radicals, ROS and hydrogen peroxide. And glutathione levels go down. And this has been shown in papers. And some of the protein thiols, here is a functioning protein with an SH group. If you react that with hydrogen peroxide, you can get sulfenic acid. This can be reduced back to via peroxyredoxins and thyrodoxin system. You can get nitric oxide, nitrosylation here, which is one modification which will change the activity of a protein. Again, thyrodoxin, and for that matter, glutathione, glutaredoxin are involved in reversing this thing to rescue this protein back here. Can also be a switch here, which is signaling. Glutathionylation is another modification which is very, we will come to glutaredoxin soon, glutathione elation is a little bit like phosphorylation. It induces, of course, a negative charge. Glutathione is a negatively charged molecule, and this is a way of modifying the protein. And finally, you can make disulfides of proteins, and of course, thyroxine is the major disulfide reductase. So glutathione levels are lost in Parkinson's disease, and the glutathione levels going down will affect the activity of glutaredoxine. And as you age, you lose glutathione and even the levels of cysteine. So it's like we slowly rust and lose the good SH groups. Now, back to the glutaredoxin system. You may remember the first picture I had with ribonucleotide reductase and thyroxine on top and then glutaredoxine in the bottom. So glutaredoxin system is glutathione reductase taking electrons from NADPH. Glutathione is high in RR cells from 1 to maybe 15 millimolar. And recent measurements by probes say that that glutathione is almost entirely reduced. And if you generate GSSG, it's no good for you. So it's probably pumped out of cells if it's not reduced by this enzyme. And glutaredoxin here is portrayed as something which also can reduce disulfides. It may work this way in ribonucleotide reductase. However, the major function of glutaredoxin is rather to be involved. This is a disulfide reduction, but here it is glutathione elation. You put a glutathione onto an SH group and you can remove it by glutaredoxin. So this is a mixed disulfide mechanism and this is a dithiol mechanism. And there are several, like our cells contain several glutaredoxins, and the specific case is monothiol glutaredoxins, which are iron sulfur clusters, which I won't speak of today. It's like in mitochondria. I'll describe a little bit of what we have done recently also. We have developed a method to measure glutaredoxin using fluorescence. So what have we done? Well, we have synthesized a compound which we call eosine glutathione, dieosine diglutathione disulfide. This is glutathione disulfide. Here is a disulfide bond, and here is a single glutathione. And if you take glutathione disulfide, it has two amino groups, and those can be reacted with eosine isothiocyanate. Eosine is, of course, a colored compound which is used to stain cells. In this case, this is an eosine residue here and one here. And the good thing with this compound is that it's completely, almost completely silent in fluorescence. If you excite at 520 and measure at 545, fluorescence is quenched by collisional sort of quenching between these two groups. So this has zero fluorescence. However, when you reduce the disulfide here and you release a single molecule of eosine glutathione, you have high fluorescence. And this is what we can use to measure things. All our measurements are basically measuring the release of eosine glutathione by fluorescence. And we can use this, we can glutathionylate parkin. In this case, we have taken the thing here, reacted it with dieosine diglutathione, and you get a glutathionylated molecule here, and you set free this one. So you can measure the glutathionylation of a substrate by looking at the formation of this thing in the fluorimeter, and this is what has been done here. You can follow here the increase in fluorescence in a machine here while you glutathionylate here with dieosine glutathione. And here is another one when you have used another form of this whole thing. But then we can also look at the deglutathionylation. So we can put this thing on, and then we put in the glutaredoxin system here, and we can then follow the release of this thing again, because this is also quenched. If we do this with albumin, which we have as a substrate in our assays of glutaredoxin with this method, the disulfide here between a protein and this molecule is also quenched. And that's very good, because then we can look at the release of this bifluorescence. And this is a very complicated slide, but again, we can follow this also by UV light, and we can see how we go from a molecule, and we can deglutathionate this by glutaredoxin and so on. And this is work in progress. We can also nitrosylate parkin. Nitrosylation you do by taking parkin, incubating with nitrosylated glutathione, GSNO, and then you have nitrosylated parkin, and then you can follow this by, for instance, an NO analyzer. And with denitrosylation of parkin is done by thyrodoxin, in this case, it requires thyrodoxin, and the full thing here. And thyrodoxin is responsible for about 50% of denitrosylation of proteins. And nitrosylation of proteins controls, for instance, caspases and cell death. And thyrodoxin is a molecule that can transnitrosylate. And recently we have also shown that glutaredoxin can do the same thing, because glutathione by itself takes care of some of the nitrosylated SNO groups in proteins. So this is a little overview, and I'm done now. And here are some of my co-workers, Rajib Sengupta with the parkin work. Again, now he's back in India, and a number of other collaborators, and a lot of the work on parkin has been done together with Schlossmacher. So thank you very much.